going deep. I feel like Kalo on the Miami Heat. The words I speak off this sheet are like a three-peat. I don't just hop on a track, I bring running cleats. I'm a player for real, more than an athlete. Let my mama tell it, could have ran for the Senate. Instead I penned it for Donovan Bennett. I'm cemented, this a deep dive. In your headphones or a long drive. Up close and personal, just like you courtside. There ain't no out of bounds here, no offsides. We going live in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. You are now tuned in to Going Deep with Donovan Bennett.
Thanks so much, Capital. This is a really special edition of the Going Deep podcast, as thankfully, finally, we get to go deep on all things professional women's hockey, because the league is out and it has been an outstanding success in week one of year one of the PWHL. First and foremost, hats off to Jaina Hefford and all of the players who've sacrificed for the better part of 3 years, all of the employees that were hired over the better part of the last 3 to 6 months, depending on the role, starting a league from scratch. I can't even imagine what that looks like and what that means. Let's hold space and give grace, because there will be some bumps in the road and some learning curves, certainly. But out of the gate, it's been outstanding. First of all, shout out not only to Toronto, who sold out Mattamy for the inaugural game of the league, but Ottawa in the nation's capital said, hold my beer. The official attendance in Ottawa, 8,318, a new record for professional women's hockey. And quite frankly, if they had a bigger barn, they may have had even more people, as the demand is high for women's hockey. And that's not just seeing it in arena. There are some causes, or quite frankly, some opportunities that are bigger than telecoms, bigger than rights holders. And I believe that professional women's hockey in Canada is one of them, which is why CBC Sports, who did a great job broadcasting the game and leading the broadcast along with the PWHL, aired the game. But not only did it air on CBC, our nation's broadcaster, it aired live on TSN and Sportsnet, something that will be somewhat commonplace throughout the season. And the numbers are in, and they made a statement. Now, for most people, ratings are tough to really quantify, because what number are you looking at? You're looking at the per-minute audience, the AMA, if you will, average, essentially, audience that someone is watching in any minute of the broadcast. Are you looking at the total audience, the reach, the peak audience? Well, just so we have a baseline, there's another big hockey game going on to start the year, the NHL Winter Classic. And right here on Sportsnet, 1.68 million Canadians watched the Winter Classic at some point, which makes it the third most watched NHL Winter Classic since 2017. It's kind of a big deal. The ratings, you ask, combined for the inaugural game of the PWHL, 2.82 million Canadians watched. So even if you argue that, you know what, there's going to be some curiosity, that number is going to regress, it's regressing from an incredibly high place. And the game wasn't close. That was the one game that was, I suppose, entertaining, but not a nail-biter. It was a 4-0 win for the road team. So all that to say, an amazing start to a league that is overdue, but just on time in terms of what we need as sports and hockey fans. Someone who needs to take some credit for where the women's game is and was not on the ice as she could have been, but was broadcasting in that joint venture between CBC, TSN, and us here at Sportsnet, is Soraya Tinker. You know her because she is the founder of the Black Girl Hockey Club, and she is a former champion playing in the PWHF with the Toronto franchise. But now she has her sights set on having an even greater influence than what she did on the ice. But I selfishly want her perspective on what she saw on the ice. So let's listen to and learn from Soraya Tinker on the inaugural game and season in the PWHL. Joined by Soraya Tinker, who is a true hyphen because has many jobs, as most when West Indians do, but that job is transitioning out of playing but continuing to grow the game, both as a host, producer, now analyst. And before we get into everything that's going on with the PWHL, I want to touch on everything that is going on with you. You've worn many hats over the last 365 as we get into 2024. How do you feel about this next chapter?
Yeah, honestly, a lot of people were asking me that question, but I honestly felt like it was the best time to pivot. With the leagues combining, I had some job opportunities and just some things that I felt like I couldn't pass up. And I have often said that I don't play because I love just stepping on the ice and playing hockey. I play to be a piece of representation and to play for the girls behind me. But I realized that I can still continue to do that just with a different aspect of my career in the analyst world, wearing many hats, still working and running Black Girl Hockey Club Canada, and then obviously covering the PWHL games as an analyst. And then the league has also hired me as manager of diversity, equity, inclusion. So my plate is pretty full, but at the same time, it's stuff that I love to do and I still get to be involved in the game. Retiring on my own terms, I think, was something that was very helpful for me. I definitely don't regret my decision. I feel really good about where I am right now.
So take me into the emotions, all that being said, being in arena at Mattamy for the first game and it's starting up and you're there and it is as big as everyone hoped it would be. And often around the women's game, things aren't done professionally, at least historically. Through the emotions for you, was it at all bittersweet not being able to experience that as a player, something that you had fought for so long?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was a little bittersweet, but at the same time, I was expecting to feel more than I did. But at the same time, I know that I've put in the same amount of work that each and every one of those girls has. I'm just in a different field now and promoting the league in a different way, not playing on the ice. And that's something that I had to realize and come to terms with. But being the competitive person that I am, I was definitely expecting to feel a little worse than I did. So with that said, I mean, I know that the way I felt allowed me to know that I made the right decision. And I mean, the professionality, we've looked at this, obviously, CW, PWHPA, PHF, and that's something that we've always wanted as players, is just more professionalism. We want to be treated like we're employees, for one, that we can only focus on hockey, but also just up to the professional standard that the men have their game at. And that's exactly what I saw from the booth, from the desk at Mattamy the other day. It was so exciting. It was electric in the place. Obviously, it's another feeling standing out there on the blue line listening to the anthem, but it was amazing for me to sit there and watch everyone in the crowd, see how many young girls were there, and it was sold out. So what more can we ask for?
It's week one, so it's still early, but is there anything around the startup of the league that has surprised you?
Yeah, I mean, just the fact that they were able to get this done in 6 months. When Billie Jean King and Stan Kasten and the Guggenheim group stepped in to help us facilitate this, I think we knew right away that we had the legitimate backing. We have the money behind us, and we have everything right in front of us to be able to make it as professional as we want it. And speaking with Stan Kasten, his motto, he said, hire good people, let them do their job. And I think that's exactly what this league has done. They've hired great people, whether they're coming in from the NFL, the NBA. We have the WNBA, Amy Shears from the WNBA. So, I mean, just amazing people who have worked in successful leagues before, not necessarily specifically within hockey, which I think is so important to note as well. And there's just so many great people on board. And now that we're all tugging the rope in the same direction, I don't see why we can't go so much farther than we already have just in this first week.
And you were playing in the PHF before, and when the acquisition of that league happened to make one unified league. It wasn't unanimous in terms of everyone being happy about it. And there was going to be, you know, some things to manage with a league going away. What is the sentiment now?
Yeah, obviously there's no hiding that. A lot of girls lost their jobs as professional hockey players, and a lot didn't even have the option to continue, whether they didn't receive a tryout invite or weren't drafted. So definitely mourning with those girls that did lose their careers as professional hockey players. But at the same time, we knew this was coming. As players, we had been waiting and waiting for a unified league. We were just kind of playing it out and just waiting for things to happen. And as terrible as it was when we got that call on a random Thursday night, I think, that our contracts had been cut, we knew that for the better of women's hockey, this was going to be great. Definitely wasn't great for girls in the moment. A lot of people lost jobs, contracts, weren't able to buy the houses, or they had already moved to the city. So yes, there were so many issues, especially when this happened. But at the same time, this speaks to the level of professionalism we've been asking for. We should have a league where our counterparts can't just pull out our contracts from under us. We have to have some safety as players. And that's exactly what is in this league, is the CBA that allows for player protection. And that goes along with the level of professionality. We've never had player protection in any of the other leagues that we've played in. And the PWHL does. So that's definitely important to note.
When you went level of you said professionality. I thought you were going to say physicality, because it has been physical. Something that would have suited your game 100%. What's it like for you to see that as the entertainment product? Because I've never really understood why the physicality is embraced in the men's game, but in the women's game, it's basically outlawed. Now we're seeing that bridged a little bit. Talk us through the mindset behind that.
Yeah, I think I said the other day, I'm waiting to see who throws the first punch. And my mom called me and said, it definitely would have been you, Soraya. So I'm happy that I'm not out there getting all the penalty minutes that I've had before. But again, this is something that the women have asked for throughout their careers, or the entirety of everyone's career, I think. We're allowed to use our bodies. It's in our rules. You're allowed to rub people out into the boards. You're just not allowed to full on open ice, hit someone and line them up if you're going to hit them against the boards. And we've realized that our refs that we've had in the past haven't always allowed us to play to the full potential of the game. And playing to the full potential of the game is what allows fans to want to watch us. They love the body contact. We love the body contact as players. I know I did. And the level of physicality that's been had in these last two games has been great. And obviously there might be a little more injuries and whatnot, but we're prepared. These women are strong. They train for a reason. The level of physical play has been super exciting. And I'm so excited to let the refs, to watch the refs, let them play more throughout the season.
But listen, I am a relative outsider when it comes to hockey and hockey culture, but I've always watched as a fan and never really understood, like, wait, they can't body check. Cause why? Cause it's almost as if, like, you had soccer, and in women's soccer, you couldn't slide tackle or head the ball. And for the arguments that, oh, well, you know, it's injury risk and they might not hurt, women give birth. Like, the most physical thing that happens to human beings, it's only women who do it. So this is my frustration, having not played the sport at a high level. But when you're in the sport, do you read that as overprotective, sexist, misguided? What's it like for the players to have to play within those guardrails?
Yeah, I think it's definitely just overprotective, I think. I had 69 penalty minutes in 32 games in my senior year at Yale. And honestly, half the penalties were just simply me going in the corner and people running into me and falling. And that's the case for a lot of the players in the league, whether they're 5'2" and jacked or they're 6'1" and stringy, they're all strong. We're hockey players. That's what they train for. And I think that's so important to remember. It's a sport. We want the physicality. That's why all of us play hockey. That's why we fell in love with the sport. It's the speed. It's the physicality. You don't get to do that in other sports. We're full equipment for a reason. So I'm so glad we've got some AHL refs that are letting them play. Most of the calls have been stick calls. And it's really good to see. It's quick. It allows for less whistles in the play and less penalties.
So you said you're looking forward to seeing who drops the gloves first or who throws a punch first. Who would you put your money on? Who you got?
I'm not sure, actually. I mean, I think Cheyenne D'Arcangelo, she's pretty calm out there, but if somebody messes with her teammate or her goalie, she's on them. So I'm looking forward to seeing Boston play, see my former captain Cheyenne D'Arcangelo shine, and she's aggressive out there. So maybe might be shy.
Yeah, as our super producer's show says in my ear, Marie-Philippe Poulin looked like an enforcer the other night. She also got booed in the nation's capital, which, I mean, I don't know if I love that because the rivalry is starting already, or I hate that because she's a national treasure. What have you made of how intense the games have been off the jump?
Yeah, I mean, it's been mentioned, everyone is friends off the ice, that's for sure, especially with Team Canada, Team USA playing against each other on a consistent basis. But again, these girls are enemies when they get on the ice. It's a competition. It's a sport. We want to win. And I think that's exactly what we got in that Ottawa-Montreal game last night. Ottawa fans wanted Ottawa to win. And if that's the case, you got to boo Poulin. Get in her head. You don't want her to score early, that's for sure. She missed her penalty shot. So who knows if that's a contribution of the atmosphere. But again, it contributes to the level of play. It contributes to the rivalry. And I think it's super exciting that fans are getting into it. I'm so excited for people to have favorite players and favorite enforcers in the league. I love seeing the girls chat back and forth to each other on the ice. The chirps are flying. So I think it's good hockey.
Yeah, I need some players mic'd up is the next thing that I'm going to need. So maybe you and the crew at CBC Sports can work on that. You mentioned Ottawa and those fans and how into it they were. The crowd was engaged. The crowd was also massive. It's the biggest crowd that we've had for a women's professional game. And, I mean, listen, I'm someone who can't just enjoy a good thing. I'm always looking to the next thing. And immediately I'm thinking, okay, well, what happens from year one to year two? Have we already maybe outgrown some of the venues? Now, I know that a big thought starter in terms of these venues is not just capacity, but having services for the women so that it feels professional, proper locker rooms, proper training equipment. And there is not that in abundance, unfortunately, in our country for a professional level, given how scarce ice time can be. But the fact that you sold out just under 3,000 in Toronto and sold out just under 9,000 in Ottawa, do you think that those numbers are sustainable or even can grow if we were in some bigger arenas?
Most definitely. I mean, I think an argument that's been used is that no one watches women's sports, but come on, it's Canada, it's hockey. If you put it out there, the people will come. And I think that's exactly what we saw. People said they wouldn't watch us, and yet Ottawa's selling out 8,000 tickets. So I do think it's something that's going to happen consistently, especially within certain markets like Toronto and Ottawa. But at the same time, it just goes to show that we're putting great product on the ice. It's not that we're bad hockey players. It's just that we didn't have the facilities and the resources put around us for people to come watch the amazing hockey that these ladies play. So I definitely do think that it's sustainable. And I think we're going to see even some markets have to boost up their size of arena for next season, potentially.
This is how you know it's real and people care, because Toronto hockey fans are already freaking out. It didn't take long.
Yeah.
The same level of passion and maybe irrational feelings that they have for the Leafs, they have now applied to Toronto's PWHL franchise. But really and truly, though, what happened? It wasn't great in terms of the nerves and really just not looking connected and really not scoring a goal or letting in four. But, you know, on the outside looking in, people thought Toronto would come out the gate strong because there are a lot of national team players on that team who've played together. And you've got, you know, a national team coach on that bench. And it seemed to be the opposite. From your perspective, what went wrong for Toronto early? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I think everyone expected Toronto to do well. Obviously, national team players, national team coach, so we expect them to click early. They know their systems and what their coach expects from them. But at the same time, the Toronto GM and coach went for familiarity, and New York didn't. And New York has four strong lines that can put pucks in the net. And I think it's really just the depth of New York that that stunned Toronto. They were super strong defensively. Obviously, Toronto has Renata Fast and Jocelyn Baroque, but Ella Shelton was an up-and-coming rising star, and that's exactly what she did, scoring that first PWHL goal. So I do think Toronto will have a good season. It's their first game. Nerves. It's their home game. So I'm not too worried about Toronto. They'll figure it out. But, again, New York's depth is insane.
I love that you mentioned Shelton, but I need you to talk your talk because you predicted that she was going to be an impact player and, I believe, score the first goal, which she did. Part of the reason why I love this is because these girls are going to become household names around, you know, Olympics, and not just talking about them every 4 years or for a couple weeks when you have world championships. But what did you see in her specifically that made you think she's going to be a rising star?
Yeah, I mean, Ella and I are the same age, so we've played against each other our whole lives, and I think Ella really came into her own when she got to Clarkson. I think Renata Fast, Erin Ambrose had really good templates laid out for her, and through the national team program, she's really progressed into one of their top defensemen, and she's able to quarterback the play. Ella grew up as a farmer, so she's got that farmer strength in her. You're definitely not moving her in the corner. She's able to take the middle of the ice, quarterback the play, and is obviously a leader off the ice as well, as she's wearing an A. So it's been awesome to see Ella throughout her career, even though it involved beating me and my team. But at the same time, she has progressed into what's going to be Canada's number one D in the upcoming years. And it was awesome to see her score that first goal. She deserves it. She scored a beautiful goal in rivalry series this past game that they played against the U.S. And it's just something that it's so amazing to watch former teammates, friends score these goals and make these historical moments. That puck's definitely going in the Hockey Hall of Fame.
Yeah, I love it. I also love the fact that now that we have higher visibility for these games and these players, games broadcast on all three national sports networks in this country, given the public broadcaster in CBC and Sportsnet here and TSN as well. I love the fact that, you know, leading into national team camps, the debate will widen in terms of who deserves that spot. And maybe it will become even more of a meritocracy. A player that I'm excited for the greater world, not just people dialed into women's hockey, to learn more about is Abby Rock. I just love her swag. I'm not really sure how you get voted the best trash talker when no one's played yet. Like, is that a sign of respect or disrespect? But either way, I love the fact that she's getting this bigger platform. What does she bring to the table?
Yeah, I mean, Abby Rock, she got great style, is a huge trash talker, and I think she contributes very well offensively, but obviously defensively as well. I think she's going to be a force, especially on New York, a great team player, getting the girls rallied up on the bench, and obviously still playing for Team USA, so she has that under her belt as well. And I think she was a younger player a few years ago, but I think she's going to prove to be a leader in this league. I think she's going to have a great fan base. And again, I mean, this new league, everyone together, it's going to give these women a greater platform than they already have. So I'm excited to watch them all use it.
You have a role in telling stories and giving platform, but I want to talk about the role that you mentioned in terms of managing diversity, equity, inclusion for a league that's starting. So really and truly, you're writing the script in terms of what that looks like for this league. What does that role entail, and what are you hoping to do with it?
Yeah, I mean, I'm excited for this role just because the women's side of the game is so much more progressive than the men's side. And now that we have this professional league that will be backed by the men's side of the game as well, I think we're really going to be able to set an example for what we want hockey to look like. obviously hockey hasn't always been the most inclusive sport, and we see the men's side struggle to continue to include people, but we don't have to worry about that on the women's side. I think we're all on the same page. We want everyone to be invited into the sport. And in terms of my role, I'm excited because I get to talk to my former teammates, my former friends about what they want to see in the league, what they want to see the diversity look like, how they want to implement it, and what organizations they want to work with, whether that's Black Girl Hockey Club, Hockey in Harlem for the New York team. There's so many diverse organizations within these cities that we can work with to promote and diversify the women's side of the game specifically. And I hope that translates into the men's side as well. I think that we can be a leading example for them. And that's exactly what I'm hoping to be able to put forth for this league.
Love it. Can't wait to watch you work in that role. And before I let you go, I mean, it's still early. There will be continued learnings, but if Project 8, the domestic soccer league for women that is starting up in Canada in 2025, could take some lessons, apply some of the blueprint from what the PWHL has and is doing to what they're trying to do, what would you say that would be?
Yeah, I mean, I think our prime example is just that you need to be together as one unit. I think as soon as we all came together as one unit, that's when things started to succeed. And then again, having a union and having player protection, I think that that's something that's super important and gets overlooked in all leagues on men's and women's sides. So player protection is so important, and I think that that definitely contributes to the level of professionalism that you want to put forth in a league. So I am so happy that the PWHL can be an example for that as well now, too.
Amen. Say it louder for the people in the back. It's something I know you will now that you are not just saying it via social or via interviews like this, but holding the microphone and really holding the keys in terms of production as an executive producer. You don't need me to tell you, but you have such a huge influence in the game. And really and truly, just thank you for everything you do.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to continue to use my voice.
Thanks again to Soraya. You can give her a follow on IG or Twitter at Soraya Tinker 71. That's SaroyaTinker 71, both on X and on IG. We'll take a break, but don't go anywhere. More PWHL talk after this.
My name is Lucille Bryan.
I'm Clifton Bryan.
My grandson has a show.
And I'm so happy that you are listening to Going Deep with Donovan Bennett.
I'm so glad that he had a show. Thank you.
Thank you, Grandma and Granddad. And we talked to someone who's freshly off the ice and Soraya Tinker. But now we're going to talk to someone who is still in and around the game, even though they're a little bit further removed from their playing days, but not far removed from having a huge platform on all things hockey, and specifically women's hockey. And that would be my teammate and friend, Ailish Forfar, the co-host of The Fan pregame, 6 p.m. Eastern on Sportsnet, also bringing you Maple Leafs radio coverage on Sportsnet 590. And she was in the building, as many lovers of the game were, on January 1st in Toronto for the inaugural PWHL game. So given all that, I want to talk to her about her perspective on the league, where she thinks it's going, and why she thinks holding space for these conversations is important. Let's listen and learn to Ailish on the start of the PWHL. So, Ailish, so much excitement for women's sport in Canada, the PWHL specifically, and I got an email yesterday that had me excited, and I'm blindsiding you with it, maybe, I guess. Have you seen the audience numbers for the first PWHL game yet?
All I've seen is, well, the game I was lucky to be at was the January 1st game, which was a sellout at Mattamy. And then the January 2nd game, I know, was record-setting numbers in Ottawa. But other than just mental math of adding those two up, I don't know. I'm excited for you to tell me, though.
Hayless, you are a radio star that is now a TV star. I'm talking about TV audience numbers. And that game that you're at, New York, Toronto, and just so we have a baseline, so you know, the Winter Classic was also played that weekend on Sportsnet, because I'm a company man. And that game reached 1.68 million. That's the Winter Classic. So that's the third most NHL Winter Classic since 2017. Just so we have a baseline, because like, we say these numbers, our audience has no idea what ratings mean and how they work. And quite frankly, it's kind of made up, because who knows anyone with a Nielsen box in their house? But these are the things that we go by. New York, Toronto reached 2.82 million Canadians across Sportsnet, TSN, and CBC. When you hear that number, you think what?
Oh my God. I like emotional. I mean, I was there in person and it was emotional, but I thought maybe reach could have been just within those walls, right? And there's a streaming numbers and there's obviously social, but to hear that 2.82.
Don't sell it short.
2.82. That's amazing. It's really amazing. But you know what? Like, half of me is amazed and half of me is like, we knew that was going to be what the demand was. We were ready for the demand. Players are putting up the type of play that should have 2.8 million people watching every night. So you can be a little bit torn, but I mean, I'm overjoyed really to hear that. And it makes so much sense and it's so well deserved. And it's just really the start of something so incredible. But that home opener to kick things off like that, like there's no more argument about, well, the quality isn't as good, the physicality isn't great. You know, I'd rather watch Bantam men's hockey. Like the things that you were hearing, you watch one game, you see the outreach and this, the support and the need for the game to be televised. And it like, it's sold itself in one day.
Well, you know, there will be argument because this is just kind of how these things go, because we can't just have nice things as sports fans. And some will say, oh, well, people are just checking it out for the first time. There's a curiosity factor. That's not even taking in the fact that it was streamed. So you could watch it for free on YouTube if you wanted to. And you know, you could get it via devices like Sportsnet Plus. And so those aren't even factoring in those numbers. But like, forget about that conversation. I think what has been undeniable has been the entertainment value, right? Whether people are watching it out of curiosity or out of support for the mission and the goal, the games have been outstanding. The atmosphere in Ottawa was outstanding. You mentioned the attendance record for a professional game. The drama that we saw in the first game in the U.S. was outstanding. If I had to choose one piece of it, physicality. Like, I've never said this to Soraya Tinker earlier. I never really understood why, like, we have the same sport but different rules depending on chromosomes. And we don't have that in soccer. I suppose in basketball, there's a slightly different basketball, but it's not like a foul is different in men's and in women's basketball. The fact that there is the level of physicality in this game to you means what?
Oh, it was awesome to watch. And it's new, right? As you mentioned, like, this is kind of a shift the PWHL and the players have put into, I guess, even the new rule book, the inaugural rule book of, we want to allow for more of this. We are ready to be playing at that high level. Hockey growing up, there was no women's or girls league. So I played boys hockey. So I played hitting. I learned how to hit. Like, I played AAA. And so these guys were big, strong, physical, and I had to learn how to hit. And then when I transitioned into women's hockey or girls hockey right around high school, it was a completely different game. It was fast, it was skilled, but there wasn't a level of physicality, like really anywhere in front of the net, behind the net, in the boards area, obviously not center ice. So you definitely like relearn a little bit of the game flow. But to watch the first three games of the PWHL and to see that they have both now, they have fast speed and physicality all combined in each game, it's like it's taken it to another level. It's so enjoyable to watch. And the first game when we saw on the first, I was like, are these girls like pissed off? Like, what's going on out here? And I know there's so much like pent up energy and aggression and excitement for this day that we almost thought like it could have been an outlier, right? Like they were just fired up about it being the first game and they want to make their mark on the new league. Game two, maybe even more physical. Game three last night, same sort of thing. Like people are just ready to show that there is no more argument that women aren't as strong, women aren't as tough, they can't get as gritty, they can't, you know, allow emotions to take over, but also to reel it back in and play a strong game. It was awesome to watch. And I've been able to speak to some of my friends, obviously, that are in the league, and they're like, it's sick. We've wanted to do this for a long time. We show physicality at times when they're either playing for their Olympic teams, when we were playing NCAA, and you get penalized right away. And like, that's just the way it had been trained into the officiating, trained into the game flow, is that you can't, you know, check someone off the puck behind the net. Now you can. And it just adds an element of like having to think, having to make quicker decisions, and having to take a check if you're behind. And so it definitely added an extreme level of excitement. I think that when you mentioned the dialogue happening with the PWHL right now, all the new fans that are coming towards it, whether they're men, whether they're female, whether they're parents or kids, that's what I'm hearing too. Is like, wow, this game's really physical. I'm so surprised. So that's nice, because I think it does help create new fans and helps change that narrative that, you know, the women's game is soft, because it is far from that now. And I think we're just seeing the start of it. I think there'll be a fight this year, Donovan.
I'm here for it. I'm the, like, we don't need fighting in hockey person, but I do.
Maybe just once.
Yes, maybe just once. But you know what? Like, there's a big part of the conversation in terms of representation and having young girls, you know, be able to see and dream mm-hmm. and believe that they can do anything they want, including, you know, playing sports. But I also think, you know, there's nuance in that conversation, and there's representation in terms of what it means to be a woman and what that looks like. And mm-hmm. you can be aggressive and dominant and physical and have a guttural yep. scream after you score a goal. But you can also walk into the arena and you could have an amazing fit, whether that means heels and a skirt, or that means a suit and cool sneakers. And there is no correlation in terms of where you're from or your sexual orientation. Like, you can be a woman and do all of those things. And so I think the physicality being part of that conversation, but I think the nuanced and diverse representation that the added exposure of these women will have huge lasting effects. But that's just me. What's your take?
I think that's so important with this league, is that, and not to say that the stars haven't been so instrumental to this whole process over the last couple of years, and obviously, you know, all the former leagues that came before this, but a lot of girls growing up knew Poulin, they knew Spooner, they knew Knight and Wickenheiser and Jaina Heffer. Like, that's kind of like the big pillars, let's say, whether you're playing now, you started a couple years ago, or you watched the Olympics. But they do definitely have a lot of the eyes, a lot of the attention, and they probably shoulder a lot of like the importance of helping grow the game. But now with the PWHL being accessible in these six original six franchises, but now on TV, on streaming, in your backyard, you are going to get to know more about these girls and the difference between them, where they're from, their background, all of those things that make them unique and unique hockey players is what's going to make this story of this season so incredible. There are international players that are not Canadian or American. And if you're coming to watch a PWHL Toronto game, you're going to know the big names, right? But you're going to find out like, oh, I really like that player. Who is she? Oh, she's from the Czech Republic. That's amazing. Like, let's find out more about her story. You're going to find out what took them on this journey to become hockey players in this pro league. Some players had to take secondary jobs over the last little while. Like, they were teachers, they were firefighters, they had to coach three different teams to just make ends meet. And I think when you get this ability to watch these games, to hear the stories of them, you're going to know more than just the top six players in the league. You're going to get to relate to the grinders, to those players that had different journeys that aren't Canadian, aren't American, were never on a national team. Like, maybe they didn't play NCAA. Maybe they played U Sports. Like, there's just so many different layers to finding out more about these players. And that's what I'm really excited about, is because I got to sit in those locker rooms and look around and know that all 26 of us in that room had a completely different story to how we got there and why we were sitting that in that room. Like, a lot of us weren't going to be Olympians at that time. Maybe we wanted to help grow the game way back when it was the CWHL. Maybe we looked around and said, I'm doing this because I'm not ready to give it up yet. That might have been me. But I just think that we're really excited to see all of the layers, all of the stories, all the backgrounds that come into each team when they put on that jersey, more than just the top six names. And I think those girls that I mentioned, the top, you know, upper echelon of the league, are excited to also pass the torch, right? To have them, you know, why don't you talk to my friend here? This is her first year of pro. She just came from this school. Like, she's never played this level. Like, let's find out more about them. So I think the opportunities are really endless in terms of being able to share the story. And then as you put it so eloquently, it's like that helps because you're getting so many different role models. And that's really what this is about.
Yeah. The interesting thing is, since this season and this league was really built in the better part of 6 months, there are still players mm-hmm. who either couldn't get out of work commitments, whether it's in the sport of hockey, playing overseas, or, you know, doing things like scouting and whatnot, that could be viable players in the future. So the talent pool will grow. I'm interested to see, given the early but obvious success, how quickly the league looks to grow, or if they want to sustain where they're at for a bit and keep the demand somewhat high. But when we talk about the original six markets, there's, quite frankly, most of them were no-brainers. Obviously, you're going to have mm-hmm. a franchise in Toronto and New York, the two media hubs of the United States and Canada. Montreal made sense because you want the league to be somewhat bilingual. Boston and Minnesota are amazing hockey markets, specifically in the women's game. The one that, I'm not going to lie, I was a little bit suspect on was Ottawa. Like, it's a small town. It's actually in the same province as another big franchise. Do you want to, you know, extend out a little bit more? Ottawa was amazing in terms of setting a new record for attendance. Stan Kasten mentioned post-game that, like, your boy Gary B, Bettman, put him on. It's like, yeah, you need to take a look at Ottawa, which I had no idea that was going to be a phrase I was going to hear to start January of 2024. But are you surprised how amazing Ottawa was in terms of not just the fact that it was a sellout, the fact that it was rocking from well before puck drop to well after?
You know, I was actually at first when that team was announced as well, kind of thought, oh, it's so, like, Calgary was the next stop, right? Like, because they used to have a CWHL team, and obviously going a little bit west would have made sense. But I remember playing youth hockey, whether it was boys or girls, and having lots of tournaments in, like, Canada or Ottawa. You always had, like, a nation's capital tournament. And the hockey market there was always incredible. And I think the reason why is they have a really deep love for their junior hockey teams. Like, they really care about going out. Obviously, the Ottawa Senators, like, they've had their ups and downs with ownership and where they're going to put an arena. But I think there's a lot of areas within an hour radius where hockey is kind of everything, right? There's, like, a lot of small towns out there. There's a lot of people that commute into Ottawa. So whenever I played in the yearly tournament out in Ottawa, we really liked it. Like, the city was pretty supportive of any level of hockey. But to see that 8,000 plus arena rocking the way it was, I guess it would surprise anyone, right? We had never witnessed something of that level. The girls that got to play felt like it was a gold medal game at the Olympics. But even when it's a gold medal game at the Olympics, it's in another country, right? Those are people that have traveled across, you know, the entire world sometimes to get there, and they're wearing their Team Canada or Team USA jerseys. But the exciting thing is, like, that's going to be Ottawa's fan base. They're going to come to see Team Ottawa at the PWHL play. There's going to be rivalries starting. Like, the fact that those Ottawa fans were booing Marie-Philippe Poulin in the nation's capital, like, arguably the best Canadian or women's hockey player ever. The fact that they were booing her at a penalty shot, I couldn't help but smile, because that's already a rivalry that's becoming Ottawa and Montreal. It made me laugh because, like, Poulin's a really close friend of mine, and the fact that she's getting booed by a bunch of Canadians after winning us multiple gold medals, she just laughed it off as well. But, like, that's exciting. That's the energy we want when we go into an arena. I think Toronto got to pick it up a little bit. I mean, it didn't help that they didn't score any goals on their home opener, but Ottawa deserves so much credit. I need to get to one of those games. Like, that's immediately what I thought. Let me get on the Via Rail here. How do I get to the next Ottawa game? Because I wanted to experience that up close and personal. They did such an incredible job. So I just can't wait to see how it continues to build, right? If you didn't get a ticket to that Ottawa game, you're finding a ticket. You want to get to the next one, right? Like, you can't help but know that they're being talked about as already the most like rabid fan base. Like, how do I get to one of these games? I've got friends messaging me saying, can I get PWHL tickets to the Toronto teams? Like, how do you get tickets? Like, the demand is already seeming to be like outpouring, and maybe too much demand for the amount of tickets. So we'll have to talk about expansion in terms of bigger arenas, but that's a good problem to have, I'd say.
Well, your other bestie, your girl Billie Jean King, was spending New Year's in Canada to be at the first game in Toronto. Then she goes on a cruise and is watching from there. Like, she's all in. She's invested. You got the chance to interview her. What was that like, and what was your takeaway from your time with her?
It was actually, she is so incredible. Like, I try not to let the moment, like, I try to be pro. I can't be a pro around Billie Jean King. She's so, so cool. She's obviously seen everything. She gets it so personally about this journey. Inside Baseballs, I actually got to interview her 3 or 4 years ago when the CWHL folded and became the PWHPA, that transitional period, and they started to do those dream gap tournaments. I was in my final year at TMU in Toronto. And I was, I had just finished playing my 1 year of pro in the CWHL, and I was doing my practicum, which is your year-end program or your year-end project. And our project that I was the producer of was to create a documentary on the PWHPA, the Dream Gap Tour. And we were student-funded. We drove down to Chicago to interview Billie Jean King at the very first Dream Gap showcase weekend. And we rented a car. Like, we were just three students from TMU headed down there to watch this tournament, but also get footage and interview her. So I talked to her that very first weekend, and there was so much up in the air. It was, what's the PWHPA? What are these Dream Gap showcases? Like, you're only playing three of them. You're in all these cities. What's going on? How are you making money? What are the players doing? It was actually like a really like tenuous time, because there was a different league happening, and people were like, why aren't you just joining them? So I talked to Billie Jean King a couple of years ago, and she actually remembered. I don't know if somebody told her before she talked to me, but she remembered having that conversation with me, which made me feel like, oh my God. But to see her goal from that very first day in Chicago and to 2 days ago or 3 days ago here in the city of Toronto was to make this thing work. And she has worked tirelessly. And so has her group, Mark Walter, Stan Kasten, obviously everyone at the PWHL, which was the PWHPA. So talking to her and kind of getting that full circle moment of, that was day one of the PWHPA, now the PWHL. She's the same driven woman with the exact same message to me that she had a couple of years ago, but with some learned experience about why that didn't work, right? But when I talk to her, I just get it that she's not going to rest until this thing is working. She understands what her journey was with the tennis world, how hard it was, how much work goes into it. It doesn't happen overnight. Hence why 3 years later, we're having the same conversation almost. But this time around, it's got the pieces that we're missing. They've got the right ownership. They've got the right investment. We had Stan Kasten on the fan pregame this week. Shameless plug, you can go listen to it on our podcast feed. And he is a guy that knows exactly how to get things working. He's got ownership in so many different teams, leagues, and he gets it. And they've put together the best team. Billie Jean King is driven as hell, and she knows that they're right on the cusp of greatness. So talking to her at the very first day of the inaugural puck drop of the Canadian game here, so between Toronto and New York, yeah, it was really moving. And you could just see in her sweet purple outfit, like, she's baller, like, the outfit she wears, she's so cool, that she knew that this was something really special. And I believed it. And I really think that we'll look back in a year, 2 years, 5 years, and say, like, wow, they did it this time, right? It feels different. She knows it's different. So that was really cool. It was a cool career moment as well. So a nice reflection point, because you don't often get to run into people of that magnitude in your day to day. So really awesome that I got the chance to chat with her.
Yeah, she's creating this amazing secondary legacy after her playing career in the Battle of Sexes, and being just a women in sport Robin Hood, like just running around helping different groups, different individuals find footing, find resources, find investment. And it's funny, I have a good friend of mine who is in sport, was an athlete, is now an investment banker. And we have these theoretical debates all the time. And he says, listen, if I have to represent a client, I would not tell them to invest in women's sports, because the track record has shown that these leagues over time do not fail, do not succeed, that there isn't a sustained audience. We can argue about whatever the reasons are, but if you have to take someone's hard-earned money and invest it in women's sport, it doesn't make sense. And I try to argue the opposite. And part of that is I'm arguing with my heart, because I want it to work. But you are at the ground level, and you know, talking to teammates who have, you know, sacrificed for multiple years, if you were speaking to an investor about what the business case could look like for women's sport in Canada, what would you say?
I mean, it's part of our culture, this sport, right? And we've seen what a positive effect it has on the men's game in terms of like creating jobs and life and journey for young kids. Obviously, we don't have to get into Hockey Canada in that sense of it. But I mean, I've grown up with knowing how important sport is in my life because of hockey. And there is a entire generation and gender that is missing out on having role models in their accessible that they not only want to play sports like, but want to grow up like. Hockey and sports in general isn't just about being a goal scorer. It's about setting expectations, goals, working for something, having teammates, learning dedication, learning leadership, learning struggle, failure, how to bounce back, how to push yourself, how to take moments of appreciation for getting to the goal. And I think all of that comes with sport. Like, I don't know who I would be without sport. That was my whole journey growing up playing, but it got me to the best schools. It got me to the best companies to work in the best field that I'm in. It's about team, the connections you make, your family, and all of that for me came with sport. So yeah, it's about putting money in, you know, sponsors' hands. It's about selling rights. It's about having ads on your jerseys, et cetera. But it's more than that. Like, that is a group of girls that are at the games now, that have already played and are on the other side of the journey, that want to have a community they care about. And hockey is a great Canadian platform for that. And I think you're missing a huge opportunity to get in at the ground level, because this thing is going to catch on like fire, as we've seen over 3 days of games, where you want to be in there when it's the starting, you're at the starting line, because you want to be there 5 years from now and see how much you've helped grow this game, how you've helped grow a next generation of players, of leaders, of amazing teams, friends, families. Like, this is everything that's in the palm of your hand. So like, that's, and I really do mean all that. Like, obviously it's nice to be, you know, an athlete and win trophies. And sometimes I've been able to do that. Sometimes I haven't, but there's so much more that you learn about yourself and about others by being an athlete, whether it's hockey, soccer, basketball, whatever it is. And I'm lucky, like, sometimes I get to coach young girls or I get to see them at the rinks and I see like such a potential for them. So yeah, invest in women's sports. It's worth it. It's hard. It takes a little bit more effort just because of the way our society is. But I think the reward is actually even more impactful than investing in something that's already there.
Well, we now have the PWHL, it is here and here to stay. And you mentioned some of the rule changes, obviously the physicality, but I want to touch on a couple others that jumped out to me and get your take on them, like dislike. First would be the 3-2-1 point system. And the other being, if a team scores shorthanded, the penalized player is freed from the box. Do you like both, either? Why or why not?
I love them both, actually. I'll start with the scoring system. Because, well, I mean, we're seeing it right now with the NHL. There's such a like clog in the standings. You get 1 point, you get 2 points. Like, there isn't an opportunity to really capitalize on a regulation win. And it makes a significant difference when you look at the way the PWHL is going to have standings. A regulation win versus just a win or an OT win, like those little points make all the difference. The Maple Leafs are a perfect example. They've got lots of overtime wins. They've got shootout wins. They've got losses. And the Eastern Conference, pretty clogged up. I like the idea of rewarding you more for getting it done in regulation. And if you don't get it done at all, like you really got to take each game with such a high level of importance. And I specifically think it's important for the PWHL because of the shortened season. Like, this is starting in January. There's not a lot of time to gain an advantage in the standings or catch up. So that adds so much importance to each game. You know, if the third period's coming around and you're down 2-1, you know the difference between 3 points, 0 points, 2 points, and one can mean a lot when it comes to playoff time. There's only six teams in this league. It's going to be really tight. So I love the idea that they're doing that. I do think there's some other leagues that do it. And I think the NHL one day would probably get to that scoring system. I think it makes that a little bit added importance to a regulation result. And then in terms of the PK situation, I really loved being a penalty killer. I think it was like, we used to call it like a power kill when I was in college and when I played afterwards pro, because it's really easy to just be kind of stagnant on the PK. You know, you hold your spot, you kind of have a box, you've got your stick in lanes. It's kind of boring, but B, you kind of say, okay, for 2 minutes, we're going to reserve our situation, whether up or down, or we're just trying to make sure they don't score. But with this PK system, there's opportunities for offense and it's encouraged and it's more fun to watch as a fan. It's more fun to play as a player, because who doesn't want to go down there and get a shorthanded goal? The amount of momentum it gives your team if you score a shorthanded goal in general is pretty high. But the fact that it ends the power play is awesome. That is such an added boost. I do think we're going to see a lot more offensive players get opportunities to play on the PK. I think sometimes we've seen that even with the Maple Leafs, for example, this year, like, you've got Austin Matthews killing penalties. He's never done that before. That's because they want to capitalize on his speed. And usually when you're on a power play, you're also stagnant. You know where you're at. You're going to stand here up on the point. You're going to set up in your play. But you're not always thinking, like, if I make this pass and Austin Matthews gets his stick in the lane, they're going, right? So I think it really changes the dynamic. It makes it a lot more fun for fans. And you should get rewarded for scoring with a man down. And you should get penalized for letting that happen. So I think it's going to add a really awesome aspect that we didn't have before. It's not gimmicky. I've seen a lot of NHL fans or even just fans of men's hockey in general be like, this is cool. Like, we should do this. So it's great that the PWHL is doing something a little different. It's their league. They can do whatever they want. And they've picked two different rules to be in their inaugural season that I think really do add just a small layer of added intrigue for fans. I'm looking forward for the first time we do get one of those PK goals because I think we'll all be like, oh yeah, that rule does exist. It'll be really fun to watch, but I think I would probably lose PK time if I was playing. So selfishly, I'm like, I'd like to watch it, but I probably wouldn't be on the PK anymore because they want the real goal scorers out there.
Fair. Before I let you go, I want to touch on some of the emerging stars in the league that, you know, now have the chance to become household names, to your point earlier, before being the faces of an international Olympic team. From an American standpoint, the one that sticks out to me, obviously, is Taylor Heisey, 23-year-old, first ever first overall pick. He grew up just 120 kilometers from Minneapolis, and not only just play for the Golden Gophers and was College Player of the Year, but now she's playing for that city, really that state. And who could write a better script? First career shot, first career goal. And what do you expect from her being one of the emerging faces of the sport, and now given the timing of when she came out, this league.
It is the perfect script to be the first overall pick to the your backyard after playing for Minnesota, for being somebody that is from that area that can already be a face of that state. To get to be the first overall pick, just the way that that worked out, because it was lottery, for her to be selected, not surprised at all. But the storyline is going to be incredible. She won the Patty Kazmaier, which for folks that don't know is like the best player in the NCAA. She's been a part of the women's team. And the best part about this league is coming at the perfect time for her, right out of university. The problem with not having that all-in professional women's league in the last little while was that there would be this year of no visibility. Like, you might just be on the national team. You might play a couple rivalry series games, and they play those all over North America, which is fun, but it's not always, okay, she's going to be here every week at the arena that I know where I'm going. It's like, here's three rinks over the next 3 weeks that you could see her. And if you miss it, you miss it. The fact that she's already going to be a face of a league, she's going to have a consistent schedule where folks can see her, and she's coming in at the height of her game. Like, when you leave university, you are in your best shape. You just played where you were practicing every day, training every day. You're at a franchise, you're at a university with multi-million dollar investment in you. It cannot be set up more for success. So the fact that there is no drop off between that she's going to coast in and be able to stay at that same level, I think the sky's the limit for her. It's scary because she's American. I'm not cheering for it in a sense, but I am, because I want to see this young American team kind of have that transition. I think over the last year with the Olympic cycle, you start to see teams making shifts to be younger, because that's, as I said, that's where the girls are at their peak. They're coming out of university. They're the best players in the world. Whereas if you're an older player, you're kind of holding on to, like, I've been trying to go through these Olympic cycles. There was no league for me to play in. Now there is. It's going to be interesting when they have to make decisions, like who makes the roster or not. But Taylor Heisey is going to be, like, she is already the next big thing. This league comes at a perfect, perfect opportunity for her to continue to just grow who she is, to be the face of a team that looked pretty good last night. I'm excited to see, and she seems awesome. I actually haven't had the chance to meet her personally, but her interviews, her demeanor, like, she's humble, but she knows, like, this is a big responsibility to be the first overall pick ever in the PWHL. Yeah. She came out pretty strong, first goal, first shot. So looking forward to seeing how she kind of takes over the American game, because she's going to be a force to be reckoned with for, I could say, the next four Olympics. Like, that's not even a bold statement. Like, I could see that being the Taylor Heisey tour.
Well, let's keep it in Canada for this one. Speaking of coming out strong, a name that Canadians and now Toronto hockey fans sadly know all too well, Corinne Schroeder. Going back to, you mentioned the NCAA, mm-hmm. best career save percentage and goals against in BU women's hockey history. First women's college ice hockey goalie to score a goal, 73 saves in a quarterfinal against Quinnipiac. Then she goes to PHF, shutout record, rookie mm-hmm. of the year, goalie of the year. Then she goes to Hockey Canada's fall selection camp and didn't allow a goal. PWHL preseason, 39 of 40 shots stopped, shutout with 29 saves in an inaugural game. Is she going to be Hockey Canada's goalie of the future? Is this really a debate? I love the fact that it became a debate, because now these games give us a little bit more insight into the names. And some have said on the women's side, the team has been so good that it didn't always have to be a meritocracy. But in terms of what she has done to raise her profile and get some discourse going, what do you make of her start to the year?
I hope Canadians are ready for this rise, because I think this might be the biggest opportunity for a goaltender that I've seen in a long time. As we mentioned, like, before there was this consistent pro league where everybody was together, it was kind of the same two or three Canadian goalies getting invited to camps, getting invited to the national team. and Corinne is like this kind of sleeper. And I don't want to use the word snubbed, but you just mentioned everything she's accomplished in her NCAA and PHF career, but she hadn't really got a look at the national team level until recently, and she still didn't really get any of the starts. And that's also a testament to how good the Canadian goaltending duo or trio is. But this might be the biggest opportunity for her because she can run away with a starter's role. And undeniable how good she was in that home opener, obviously the first shutout ever in PWHL history. But she's got the resume, and now she's got the league to be continuing to add to it. And she's right in your face. And there's going to be the Hockey Canada scouts at every game. Some of them work for the other teams. Like, some of them are their head coach of the other team, which was the situation with Toronto. Their head coach is the head coach of the Canadian national team. So she's putting on a pretty good audition, a pretty good tryout to continue to not only get invites, but let's get starts. Because getting invited to the camps is one thing. Getting invited to the rivalry series is one thing. But when there's a duo or a trio that's so hard to break into, this will be the opportunity to really force yourself into that conversation. I was talking to our co-host, Justin, about these games, and they've been really low scoring so far. That's because there are the best, like there is no room for goaltending that isn't the upper echelon. There's only six teams. There's six starters. There's six backups. Like, you have to be one of the best goalies on one of these rosters, and she is. And without this league really giving her the opportunity to be in the constant dialogue, I don't know how long it would have taken for her really to make her way to this level. So I'm really excited to follow that story. I was surprised by it when I saw it up close and personal on January 1st. I hadn't really been able to follow much of her career. Thank God I wasn't playing when she was, because we would have been playing against each other in NCAA hockey. I'm glad I wasn't, because that's the end of the world for me. But she looked really steady. I'm excited. I think she'll be a household name soon. And that just adds to this goaltending intrigue when Canada does make roster selections, because I think it puts a lot of people on notice that we're comfortable maybe in the net, that there's a lot of really young, really great talent coming up the pipeline. So super excited. Like, I think it's a bright future for the Canadian team. So when she's playing Taylor Heisey in the Olympics, you know, here's your story. Who's the better goal scorer? Who's the better goaltender? I'm sure we will see those two go head to head down the road for sure.
No doubt. And you'll definitely be talking about it, certainly across all platforms for us here at Sportsnet. And that's my last question. Is, you know, telling these stories and how do we do them? And we know, sadly, that women's sports gets 2% of the mainstream coverage. And it's easy to say we need to cover women's sports more. But you host a show. You have input in what the lineup is. And there is certainly a temptation to, in our industry, just play the hits. There's a reason why in First Take, they talk about whatever team LeBron is on and the Cowboys every day, because people want to hear about those teams no matter how they're doing. And so I wonder for you, how do you balance giving what you know and our bosses know audiences want, but also speaking to quote-unquote niche audiences, although 2.82 million people is not niche, and speaking to sports that, you know, need some coverage so that that audience can actually grow? How do you balance those things?
Yeah, it's been a pretty exciting week, and I think easy week to have this in the dialogue. We had Billie Jean King, as I mentioned, got to talk to her. We played that on our show. We had Stan Kasten, who obviously is, yeah, he's a Dodgers president CEO, but he also is part of the advisory membership that put the PWHL together. So those 2 days, those two shows were easy. But now it's like, next week, are you continuing to hold space for the PWHL? Because it isn't the inaugural week. Every team's played already. I find that as a good challenge, because I want to incorporate that into our 60-minute show, which is really only 50 when you have commercial breaks, which is really only about 30 when you've had 2 interviews with guests. So how do I find a space to bring that up, to make sure it's in your constant dialogue when we do have Leafs, Raptors, Blue Jays, NFL to cover? It's a challenge that I'm excited to take on. And I'll say it's been received really well, not only in our company, of course, but with listeners. I've had people reach out to me and be like, it was a really cool segment. I didn't know about XYZ. What's your team to cheer for? Who should I cheer for? I really liked the play of this person. So I'm getting a lot of good response from new fans. And I think that's it, is that I want to allow it to be accessible. Like, if you never watched women's hockey, that's okay. Like, come on board, right? You don't have to come from it at a level of expertise where you were a CWHL fan, WHL fan, a PWHF fan. Like, there's lots of leagues. If you missed it, that's okay, because this is something really new. I also think using my own social media channels is going to be important, because, yeah, we are a little bit restricted with the time on our show, but I mean, I'm lucky to have a good enough following that I think I can be authentic. I can share my thoughts on games, on players you should watch. And I'm going to take that challenge on, and I'm loving it. Like, I am loving that the last three nights of this first week, I watched women's hockey every single night. Like, that is nothing I've ever been able to do before, even if it's just on casually. Last night, we're watching the Leafs game. Yeah, I had a second screen up watching a PWHL game. So it's really exciting. The biggest thing is, and I'll challenge us all, is when it's been 3 weeks into the season, is it still the number one topic you're talking about with your friends? Is it still the top of your Twitter feed? Is it still something that you're checking the standings and sharing posts? Because that's the momentum we're in right now. It's exciting. It's easy. But I want to see that same level of enthusiasm when it's game 16. So a challenge for me, obviously, so awesome to be on your podcast. Like, your platform is huge to be able to talk about this. It's so exciting. I know Jeff Merrick and Elliot Friedman on their podcast, they've given a lot of space to what the PWHL is doing, and they've had player interviews on. So the more the merrier, the more access, the more platforms where people can be seeing this is awesome. And I'm going to keep that energy up for this entire season. And in the off season, you'll have drafts. You'll have who's available. Like, what are free agents? Like, it's a real thing. It's a real full news cycle, 12 months of the year. And I'm excited to be a part of it.
In the off season, I hope we have team names, logos, yeah, some extended merch. But right now I'm happy with the hockey. You said I'm lucky enough to have a social media following that's big. That's a humble way, our listeners, of her saying that she's an influencer, which is true. But your influence this past year, whether it has been having somewhat educated conversation about sports, which is a lost art, growing women's sports, specifically hockey, and your influence in talking about issues personal to you have been really, really important. Mm-hmm. So I wish you all the best in 2024.
Thanks, Don.
And I'm going to continue to bother you to learn from you.
Gladly. No bother at all.
And her social platform is at Ailish Forfar, AILISHFORFAR. You can find her on IG, where she's very active. But if you're still using X like I am, you can find her there as well. You can find us wherever you listen to podcasts. Please like, favorite, share, and subscribe. And if you can get tickets to a PWHL game, probably on the secondary market if you live in Canada, make sure you get out. And if not, watch the games. As mentioned earlier, they are on CBC, on Sportsnet and Sportsnet Plus. The league streams them via their YouTube channel. And there are no enemies in this conversation. They're also found on TSN as well. Thanks for listening. Talk to you soon.